Good morning and welcome to the second day of the October term of the South Dakota Supreme Court, held here at the South Dakota School of Mines and Technology, specifically on campus of Fox Elder Job Corps, Douglas High School, Doka High School, clerk of courts for the clean, courts office, and Western Dakota Technical Institute. We have available outside, and if you can get them coming in, you certainly are free to help yourselves during the break or when you leave. Several booklets. First one, which is a great cover and has the seal of the State Supreme Court on it, tells you a little bit about the justices and also gives you a short synopsis of each oral case during this term. We also have a blue colored book that explains in writing how the judicial system of the state of South Dakota works. Finally, we also have a great covered book with a picture of the court on the cover. It's a new publication, it's a photographic history of the South Dakota Supreme Court. These are complimentary, which will help yourselves. First case for the court this morning is State of South Dakota versus Oakland v. Engesser, thank you. Mr. Engesser's counsel is Mr. Kennedy Branch, attorney for the city. State of South Dakota, the appellee is representing Mr. Sherry's assistant attorney. Mr. Branch, you may proceed, sir.
It's our contention here today that this is a fair trial. I set forth four legal issues in my brief, and I would propose moving to the first one on the front first. That issue is whether the appellant's Fourth Amendment right to be free from unreasonable searches and seizures was violated when a state trooper ordered that appellant's blood be seized for testing and analysis without consent, without the reading of implied consent, without the texture of custody.
For the benefit of the crowd, would you mind giving us a thumbnail sketch of the facts that gave rise to this?
Happy to do that, sir. On July 30th in the year 2000, at dusk, there was an accident out by Sturgis close to the Tilford Way Station. People were driving down the interstate towards Rapid City. Corvette went blasting past. Came down the hill with the way station on the right, switching lanes, loses control of the vehicle, smashes into a van that is occupied by the McPherson family, a local family here in town. Corvette spins, flips, rolls down the median, it rests inside the Corvette. It's one Dorothy Finley, and she was pronounced dead at the scene. Outside the Corvette is Mr. Oakley, the Engesser. As the matters unfold, of course, people going by, they're stopping at the meeting trying to help. They find Mr. Engesser to the Sturgis side of the vehicle, which would have been the driver's side of the vehicle. The door was open. His testimony indicated from 6 to 20 feet away from the vehicle, depending upon who you spoke to. Dorothy Finley was crushed up inside the vehicle. Initially, the information at the scene provided to the troopers by the paramedics and other witnesses was that Dorothy Finley was in the driver's side of the vehicle, crushed there under. We could not verify that because no photographs were taken. Later on, it was determined, speaking to some of the witnesses, that in fact she was found on the passenger side of the vehicle. One of the key issues in this case that dealt with throughout this appeal, and I might as well just give all the facts at once here, is that we wanted to know where the location of blood would have been inside that Corvette so we could try to determine who was colliding where inside the Corvette to determine inferences could be available. As
all your issues be. Really focused on one central issue. That's
absolutely. He denies, Oakley being Engesser denies being the driver. He really has no memory of the event. And this was a circumstantial case when we were trying to get the circumstantial.
In the right side passenger door is also crushed, so it could not be opened, except maybe with the jaws of blood.
Correct. The right side passenger door of the Corvette, as that vehicle swung into the back of the minivan, was crushed inwards. The window at that point was broken out. The roof came up, so there was a wider window opening. And as the Corvette is rolling through the median, it lands on its top, crushing one occupant inside the vehicle and one occupant inside the vehicle.
So isn't it likely that if the right front door was crushed, she's in the passenger side, she's also crushed somewhere, and she was the passenger and he was the driver? Why not?
We learned through the testimony of Rex Reese in the trial court that an automobile collides with something.
There were no seat belts on it.
No seat belts at all. When an automobile collides with something, and you can think of those commercials where the dummies are in the seat belts. When an automobile collides with something, the bodies continue moving in the same direction, travel as they were immediately before the impact. And in our position here, if there's an impact, you want to see what type of blood evidence would have been on that driver's door, passenger's door, to see if it collided with it. An argument.
You're talking about dummies in a car and all this. What is this in the record? How does that come?
Well, it's
or is
in
this
the,
just from your own knowledge?
Well, it's a little from my knowledge, but it is in the record.
Yeah.
And here's where it's in the record. Rex Reese was called to examine the vehicle to determine if it contained any blood or serology evidence to identify who was where. And in that regard, he went, in the first place he looked was the passenger door of that vehicle, because that was what he called the mechanism of injury. Area of the first collision, that would be where he would expect to find trace evidence if in fact it existed. The reason he did that was because of this principle I was talking about earlier about how bodies, when they're moving in one direction and the vehicle collides with something, the bodies keep moving at the door.
Did he testify and give an opinion compared to the individual?
He said that there was so much force exerted upon the vehicle, could not give. Did not know the answer to that question. Well, he did find blood. He found blood on the roof of the vehicle that he did not test, and that he did not preserve or photograph. Did not test the door or the presence of blood, he says in part because of the mechanism of injury and the way the car looked, but also because the integrity of the evidence had been compromised. I really wish I could hold up the photograph of the Corvette, the way that it was stored out in the tow lot. It was stored, it was impounded by Trooper Fox because it was something that he wanted to have tested for blood to try to figure out who was sitting where. But it was taken to an impound lot out by Sturgis, put in the weeds and left in the rain. And when you look at the photograph that Rex Reese took a month after the accident of this particular door, the record doesn't show any testimony of someone. The record does show a photograph. It shows this particular door covered in
how
dust.
How do we know it's rain? It was outdoor and exposed to the elements.
It's correct. It was just right out, worse condition than I would store my lawnmower or someone. Taken out. This was a piece of evidence that the authorities knew could have had an important impact on the case. They wanted this evidence to be tested. They made requests of experts to come in and test this evidence. By the time the expert gets there, it's sitting out in the yard like an old sprinkler, just oxidizing in the sun.
How soon were you on the case?
The accident occurred on July 30th. I was called into the case in March. The following year, charges weren't filed until 7 months after.
So no, he didn't give your client an opportunity. And
correct. There was no need to. There wasn't even an open criminal file which would allow him the opportunity to make a motion to demand for something.
On that issue, as I read this, Mr. Reese indicated that the possibility of successful results.
That's correct. The accident reconstructionist that was brought in by the state, his testimony was suppressed by the state. But it's not correct as it relates to Mr. Reese's testimony. Show you points of the answer where it indicated possibly the place. Mr. Reese did testify that hard to place the individuals. This wasn't a case where there was any information indicated that they left in file.
That's his testimony. Spoilation.
Here's why. Because we have 24 days of power. Car was impounded on the 30th of July. It was impounded and taken to a tow yard so that the trooper could have it tested for blood. He asked his superiors that it could be tested for blood. He knew the next day when he saw the vehicle in the tow yard without a tarp or anything on it, that it was not being properly protected, that he wanted to have it tested for blood. It wasn't until 24 days later when Rex Reese looks at the car and says, I can't get any information trace here. You'll need to go to a mechanics expert. He was sending them to a mechanics expert, not because it was impossible to determine the location of people in the vehicle by the presence of blood, but because, in his words, in part, the integrity of the evidence had been compromised. And that's in the record. At his motions hearing, he testified that the integrity of the evidence had been compromised. And at the trial, just a straight read of the cross-examination, at the trial, led him down this path. Sir, if the impact point is the mechanism of injury, if a person's blood were there, would that be consistent with them sitting in the passenger seat? Yes. So would it be helpful if we knew that something like that was on the passenger side? And the record on the cross-examination was such that I established it was possible that there could have been a spray of blood on that passenger door, and that that thin spray of blood could have been destroyed by the elements, by virtue of the fact that it was left out open all those months, even that 24 days. Rex Reese testified that the integrity of the evidence could have been destroyed as quickly as a matter of minutes if it had been properly preserved. And that he, as the head of the state crime lab, under no circumstances would have stored this Corvette in the fashion it was stored had there been any possibility at all that it would be tested for blood. Yes, at trial, he did end up saying, I don't think that the blood would have helped. But we still should have been free to argue, what about the doubt that exists because the blood was never preserved and because that Corvette was sitting out there?
Did you argue that?
I did argue that.
You say you should have been free to argue. You were free to argue that the reasonable doubt that the state had not properly taken evidence and allowed it to support it. You get to argue that.
I did get to argue that. But that argument was wrong. The argument was not comporting with the requirements of due process. And the reason for that is as follows. There was no instruction given to the jury on spoliation that they were sworn to follow, describing to them that the state had a duty to preserve the evidence, and that if, in fact, spoliation occurred, that the inference needs to be in favor of the defendant, that it's not his fault. So by me standing up and being able to argue that, and I did argue that, I rode that horse all the way down the hill as far as I could, but I couldn't stand up and hold an instruction up and say, the law of this state is that the state has a duty to preserve this evidence. And if exculpatory evidence is lost by virtue of something that Engasser had nothing to do with, then if there's any doubt, it should be applied in his favor.
You did get to without instruction to say that there is any reason that the defendant should benefit all those facts.
Yes, they did give the reasonable doubt instruction. However, I was not allowed to pursue the theory of my defense of my case anchored in the instructions that the jury was sworn to follow. It is for that reason that
you're saying that the trial court erred in that theory. What was the trial court's reason for that theory? I mean, what you offered was a pattern instruction that's supported by South Dakota case.
The two instructions that I offered on spoliation were basically Hornbook law. The first one said they had a duty to preserve the evidence.
mean, it's supported by South Dakota Supreme Court decision.
State versus Kietzke, 1971, as echoed in State versus Charles here just recently, that if evidence is spoiled, there must be an inference in favor of the person who didn't spoil it. In this case, if such evidence would have existed, then the fact that it would have been spoiled loses forever the opportunity to test it. Now, I think we
so
can
why
also...
why didn't the trial court... Would you spoil it?
I don't know why he did not elucidate that record. He indicated that, yes, the state has a duty to preserve the evidence. And then he denied my request to instruct the jury.
So you're telling us that basically it means because evidence in the record supported giving that instruction.
That's correct.
I have to ask you something. You said...
Not, but I pulled that testimony out of the jury. This is on jury trial, page 592. You will agree with this statement. If you're worried about blood on the passenger door of that vehicle, it's not a good idea to leave it out in the rain. We'll agree that there's no way, that's no way to store evidence if blood can be an issue. I agree. Could have been better, yes. Question, all right, meaning that if that car would have been stored away in the building, it's possible that one could have found trace evidence of blood of either Dorothy Finley or Bernie Engasser on that passenger door. And that would give us some evidence in this case. The answer would say probably yes. But we'll never know that. No, I suppose not. That's because the evidence wasn't properly preserved. There's even more. The trooper testified at the trial that if there would have been blood evidence on that passenger door, that would have been something he would have considered in handing down these charges. The trooper was basically the only one who took the stand and testified that Bernie Engasser was driving, and that that had been his determination based upon the investigation.
Did the trooper at the accident site make any inspection?
Trooper did look at his flashlight, and with his flashlight indicated that he did not see any blood, but it was dark out, but it was his intent to look at the vehicle later, and that he wanted to have. We know there was blood there because Rex Reese found some on the roof. We know that they were at least thinking the trace evidence was important because they removed a visor from the vehicle a month later that had a gray human hair on the passenger side visor, which incidentally was consistent with my client's hair. So we know that they were looking for trace evidence, and they were looking for it for a reason. That reason being, and it makes sense, I'm sitting in a car, the door is right here, and I smash into a van. Both these people were bleeding. Both of these people. If there's a bunch of blood or any blood that you can tie DNA on, this area that the driver wouldn't necessarily get to, you can argue that to support your position that he was the passenger. Or if Dorothy Finley's blood were all over that door, you could argue that she was in fact the passenger. Dorothy Finley bled more than Bernie Engasser in this case. And if in fact she would have been the passenger, her blood would have been all over that door. Would have been all over that door. The fact that she had right side injuries, yes, that works in the state's favor. Bernie Engasser had right side injuries as well. The fact that she had alcohol in her system, that would indicate that she probably could have been driving the vehicle. The trooper finds that usually people drive their own vehicles. There was not one witness who placed Bernie Engasser in the driver's seat of that vehicle on the day in question. So, yes, if there would have been blood there, and we will never know if there's blood there. If you look at the photograph of what the state that vehicle was in out there in that lot, it's like a junkyard. It's virtually what it is. It's just left out there, and the moisture, whatever kind of moisture it was, whether it be rain or dew or anything, you can see it in the photographs. It's running down the side of that vehicle. And that was part of the reason that Rex Reese did not test that for the presence of blood. So whatever was there, there's no way we will ever know. It could have been degraded in a minute or two. It could have been degraded just by being placed in the sun. but that's not Bernie and Gasser's fault. And
well, let's just, you know, it, you hit that point pretty hard, I understand. How about the fact that you objected to what the officer was allowed to testify to? Is that critical in this case?
I think it's an important issue. I think it's an important issue because think about any trial any of us have ever been through. Do you ever get to say to a witness, why don't you tell me when you think the man is lying? That's exactly what happened here. His statement was played in front of the jury, and then the officer, who gets to wear his uniform, his badge, he has the natural respect of the jury by virtue of his position. He gets to say, oh, he's lying there, I know that. He's lying there, I know that. He's lying there, I know that. That is...
But he said that he based that upon his experience, didn't he?
He did at one point.
Did he delve into what that experience was so that he could challenge whether or not that was credible, that he was trained as far as to give his own eyeball lie detector?
The rocks were piling down so hard on me in that case, I did not want to ask what his experience was.
You didn't know him.
Well, his experience is probably that of any other patrolman, and if they're now trained to be able to testify that someone else is lying, then there would be no need for a jury trial.
There were instances. Realize that there were times when this was to give his opinion. There were instances where the officer almost didn't show it.
Well, first of all, even if the truth is that has no relevance. Secondly, it's not impossible.
So the witness can't.
Go down to the defendant's statement. Prior to testifying and say, he's lying here, he's lying here, he's lying here.
Could he go down and say, I don't believe that statement because of the fact that I have these other things that I've considered? That wouldn't be objectionable.
Very objectionable. I don't know how I would
he
ever.
He doesn't say he's lying. He says he doesn't believe.
Well, his beliefs have nothing to do with it. Relevant.
Your time is expired.
Thank you. I missed a lot. Please rely on the briefs.
May it please the court. My name is Sherry Sundahl. I'm the Assistant Attorney General of the State of South Carolina. I think there's a few factual statements that were made in the course of the public argument that I just want to make sure I clarify. At one point, Mr. Mims said that there was no evidence in the driver's seat of that vehicle in the accident. That's not true. The record itself supports the fact that the defendant himself admitted that he drove the vehicle. He admitted that to Trooper Fox during the course of the interview.
Is that when they left the bar and started?
No, it was earlier in the day. I think, I'm not certain if it was morning or afternoon when he made that comment to the trooper, but he did admit that. Day. Another statement that was made in reference to the hair that was found on the visor, there's absolutely nothing in this record to tie that hair to the defendant. I believe Mr. Reese's testimony would be that there was nothing, there was no connection between that hair to anyone. And so any statement that that hair matched the defendant's is not supported. I think it's also important to point out that Mr. Reese testified, and I'll concede the accident happened on July 30th, and Mr. Reese did not look at that Corvette until August 23rd. But he looked at the passenger side of the door, which he felt was crucial if there were going to be any biological evidence to be found, and said he did not see anything that was there. And he also, and I think this is important, Justice Zinner touched on it, stated that biological evidence helpful in determining who was driving the vehicle at the time of the crash, because you needed to look at the point of impact. And it would appear that the right side and possibly the passenger window, which had been broken out, was the greatest point of impact. And that was my understanding of the statement.
Is
It's just one side. It's just one side of the evidence. Why shouldn't the judge have a special instruction?
The record didn't support it, Your Honor. This court reviews a decision to not instruct under discretion standard. And the instructions are sufficient if they correctly state the applicable law in front of the jury. And I'll concede that a defendant is entitled to instruction on their theory of the case if the evidence exists to support that theory. There isn't evidence to that exists to support that theory, the theory that they claim. There was blood found on the roof of the vehicle. It wasn't tested because Mr. Reese said it won't tell us anything because of the nature of the crash, the violent nature of the crash. The car rolled and rolled and rolled. So biological evidence, both the defendant and the victim were bleeding. I don't know. Testimony is that the defendant was bleeding quite profusely out in the ditch. I don't recall any testimony in reference to the victim and how much she was bleeding. Obviously, she had very severe injuries on the right side of her body. And that, to Mr. Reese, was crucial because whoever was sitting in the passenger side of that vehicle was going to have severe right side injuries. And that's indeed what the court did.
No dispute.
I'm not going to stand before this court and try to tell you that it was preserved to the best of the state's ability.
So that, you know, and subsequent, if it had been properly looked at it, it would be a better investigation to see whether or not it was anything.
There's many coulds in that statement, but that's, I think, the essence of their argument. There might have been.
A lot of times you may could and have the opportunity to experiment.
I'm not going to suggest that they did all that they could have done, and I think the trooper was candid in testifying that they didn't preserve the Corvette to maybe the best of their abilities. I don't think that's an issue here. At issue is what could have been found, and what was found, and I think it's important. I wish I had the site. I don't have it. But Mr. Reese testified that he made a special point of looking at that passenger door, which, by the way, was crushed. Couldn't be opened with the jaws of life. They got Dorothy Finley out through the driver's side, not the passenger side. And he did not see any biological evidence on that. And he made a special point of checking that door. I think it's also important to recognize that Trooper Fox recognized that blood evidence or biological evidence could be important the night of the crash. And he testified that he looked for signs of bloods and body fluids, and he found none. And I think there's testimony in the record from paramedics who helped remove Dorothy Finley.
Is it fact that the trooper did call for Reese to come out to make the investigation? Did he let the paramedics do this?
They did.
Got there through the trooper's request because he is their in-house expert to do that.
Correct. He did come out. The Trooper Fox went to his supervisors and said, I think we should get somebody out here to look at this Corvette. And that's what happened. And so on the 23rd of August, Rex Reese, the director of the crime lab, came out to Sturgis and went to the impound lot and examined the vehicle. And his testimony, I think, is real important here. He said there's little evidentiary value to what was left in that vehicle. The damage was... You have to look at the damage on the side of the impact and look to the damage on the vehicle and how it caused injury to determine who was driving.
But counsel says that Mr. Reese, as I look at it, admitted that by the way it was stored and preserved, that he couldn't make a meaningful evaluation because of it sitting out there to see whether there was any biological evidence because of the deterioration. Did he or didn't he? I'll read that, but let me ask, what do you say on that?
I say Mr. Reese's primary, the scope of Mr. Reese's primary testimony was there was little significance to testing the body fluids left in the vehicle to show the location of the occupants because of the nature of the crash. I'm not going to stand before the court and say that Mr. Reese testified that there would be no reason to look at that. But I think the major portion of his testimony was there was little value to looking at what was in that car. This is a very small, compact vehicle in terms of space within the car. Obviously, both persons were injured. Blood is going to be flying throughout the compartment of the car. What you need to look at is the condition of the car and the impact location, which was the right side of the vehicle by the driver's door, if I understand that. That's what he testified to. Now, did he testify that there was no purpose in preserving the vehicle and preserving the evidence? No, I'm not standing here. But he also said that he did not think there would be a lot of significance to the testimony.
What about the testimony of a witness getting up and saying that the other individual in the statement he's given is not? That seems going a little too far. I know it goes to the ultimate issue, maybe, because you're talking about credibility and things like that. But I've never seen it happen. I'm just wondering. Have you got any authority that says it's okay?
Well, I think you have to look at the broad picture of what was happening there. And you have to look at the taped interview that occurred between the defendant and Trooper Fox on the 13th of September. And the jury got to listen to that tape. And on that tape, the trooper says to the defendant, "I don't necessarily think you're lying to me."
But he did.
He did,
so
but he was...
So is the trooper lying to Mr. Angasser?
He's trying to get Mr. Angasser to talk to him. So was the trooper necessarily believing that everything was the defendant was telling him at
Justice
that point?
Justice Amundson's question was, do you have any authority that supports that?
The authority I have would be to argue that it was relevant in explaining to the jury the whole picture of what was going on. Because the jury heard the trooper on the tape telling the defendant, "I don't think you're necessarily lying to me," but yet the next day the trooper hands in a report wherein he concludes that it's the defendant that was driving the vehicle. And
well,
I think it was important.
Well, then, did the report go into evidence?
I don't recall if the report itself went in evidence, but obviously the trooper was aware that the jury was aware that the trooper had come to the conclusion that it was the defendant who was driving the vehicle. And that was to explain to the jury the whole picture, if you will.
But you know, we don't allow experts to bolster and pass on credibility. I know, like in some child abuse cases, why is it, would this be any different in allowing this to have a, and you know, he's got the aura of an expert as far as a guy, you know, he probably should have got a tough job. But to come in and just say, this guy's lying, is that how we track this? I've never seen it before. Maybe why it's troubling to me.
Well, I think what the trooper said, I thought he was lying to me. That's the essence of the testimony. And the trooper was allowed to explain why he thought he was lying to me. Because the defendant said, "I only had 2 years that day." The trooper obviously knew that the defendant did not get to a blood alcohol content of 1.125 by 2 years.
So the trooper is saying that some of the stuff that he had investigated and data that he had accumulated over this before that interview didn't just fit in. It didn't jive.
Exactly, and that helped explain how he came to the conclusion it was the defendant who was driving. Because there's a lot of factors that went into that conclusion. The trooper had to do a lot of investigating to determine who was actually driving the vehicle at that time.
Couldn't he have said that, based upon my investigation, when I look at this, it's inconsistent, it doesn't make sense, rather than just say, blatantly, he's lying? Would that be more appropriate? Because he's saying that he is just being accurate with it.
Again, we're trying to explain to the jury what's going on there. And I think he explained to the jury, if I recall correctly, and I hope I'm not getting a bullshit grand transcript from the trial transcript, I think he explained to the jury, I was trying to get him to talk to me. And that was one of the things. I said to him, "I don't think you're necessarily lying to me." I knew, though, that there were some things that he said were not truthful and were inconsistent. For instance, Dorothy never let anybody drive her car. But yet later in that same statement, he said, "I drove the car earlier that same day."
But
let's talk about issue number one first. This was not yet covered in the argument, but in the brief, Mr. Ranch claims that the state had no right to take blood tests of NPS because at the time they believed that Ms. Finley was the driver of the vehicle, and therefore there was no problem.
Well, I think, first of all, it's not true that the trooper believed that Dorothy Finley was driving the car. I will concede the trooper put down in two different reports that she was the driver, but I think if you look at his testimony, you will see he wasn't sure who the driver was, and based upon what he later found out that night, by the time he asked before that he ordered the blood be drawn, he knew that Dorothy Finley had been found on the passenger side of the vehicle, and the defendant was found outside the driver's door.
At the time you put it down incorrectly in the report, he had been told that she was in the driver's seat.
The first report, the initial accident report, and by the second report, the major accident report, I think is the title of it,
Did he have that corrected by the time he took the blood test?
I don't know that he had written a second report by the time he took this.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I don't think he had, but I think if you look at his testimony, it's clear that he was not convinced that Dorothy Finley was the driver.
But the question is, did the state have the right to take a blood test of Mr. Engesser at that time?
Yes, I would say the state did.
Tell me why.
Because of the exigent circumstances. He had probable cause to believe the evidence existed that he was searching for. He knew
Which
that
was what? That Mr. Engesser was laying outside the car on the driver's side.
Yes. And nurse that stopped and quite frankly saved Mr. Engesser's life, I don't remember her name, talked in terms of smelling alcohol about the defendant. There was a strong odor of alcohol about the defendant. When the trooper goes to the hospital, he can smell the alcohol. The defendant has admitted to the doctor he's been driving. It's the location of the parties in the vehicle or outside of the vehicle. All of those things led the trooper to believe he knew there was an issue as to who was going to be driving.
You said the defendant had to the doctor.
That's
that
correct.
He had been driving.
That's correct.
The hospital did.
That's my understanding. Yes.
No, I sure don't recall that from the record.
My recollection is that the defendant admitted that he was driving to the doctor. And if I am wrong, I apologize, but I believe that's what I have in my
mind. I thought when the trooper first came to the emergency room, he saw him, he told the defendant told the trooper not to.
Or excuse me, did I say driving? I mean drinking. Did I say driving?
Oh, yes.
I apologize. He told the doctor I apologize. He told the doctor he had been drinking. I apologize. That's a big difference.
Does the fact that there was a death play into what the decision?
Well, I think it's exigent. There's clearly exigent circumstances.
It seems like we had a case now. Did we say that it was proper under those types of circumstances to take the unauthorized or unconsented blood test? Does this fit into that case?
I think it does. Defendant obviously argues no, it doesn't, because it's not what the defendant would call incident to arrest.
He says you have to be under arrest.
And I don't think that's true, and I think this court in Nyan or Nijin, however you said it, in fact, I think this is the correct quote. There's nothing in our current statutes or case law that required the decision to arrest be made before the blood sample was requested.
When the trooper ordered or requested the sample to be taken, he knew that she was deceased.
That's correct. He knew at the scene of the accident that she had died.
So the test would be whether or not the officer had probable cause to believe that he had committed a crime by drinking and driving and causing this accident. To believe, really, basically, as to probable cause to believe that he might have been was the driver of the car.
Yes.
It isn't the officer's own individual belief. So even if the officer was wrong, that's not the test, is it?
No. And I would suggest this to the court. The incident to arrest, the arrest really doesn't do anything. That's right. It's rather, are there exigent circumstances and is there probable cause? And obviously he was in the hospital, so we know that blood was drawn. So the Schmerber test that this court has recognized, I would argue to this court, were met at the time that the trooper ordered that blood.
And in this case, the blood was taken from the deceased because he wanted to know all that he could find out about until he found out who was driving it. I was taking a thorough investigation.
That's what he was attempting to do. He was trying to be a conscientious good law enforcement officer and make sure that he preserved the evidence he knew would be needed in furthering the investigation as to who was driving. And I think it's a fair assessment from his testimony that by the time he ordered that blood be dry, I don't think he phrased it this way, but he was really suspecting that the defendant was the driver, based upon he had finally gotten straight and square.
Actually, the officer really.
I would agree with you. It's the objective standard of whether the facts were present for the probable cause of evidence of
existence.
You have 2 minutes.
I'll help you out a little bit. There's a recent South Dakota case in the last 2 years. I can't think of the name. But it clearly says the important thing is the objective standard, not the subjective.
That's correct. Unfortunately, I can't think of the cases off the top of my head, Your Honor, and I apologize for that.
I'll ask my law clerk.
But that's my recollection of the case law. And I'm trying to remember what I said in my brief, and if any of that was going to be helpful to me, I don't recall right now. But it's certainly the state's argument that the trooper had probable that point in time, and that his act ordering that blood be seized was wrong. Unless there's any other questions, respectfully ask that this court affirm your judgment and conviction.
Any further questions from the court? No, thank you very much, counsel.
Thank you.
Mr. Wrench, you have 10 minutes, sir. Probably one of these.
Thank you. The case that you're asking about is State versus. It's our position that the appropriate standard for that search would be the objective standard, probable cause to arrest the cause to search standard. We will agree that
the State versus Plot was the intersection accident here.
Yes, it was.
I think you were called in.
That's all. Before I go on, I want to make 2 points. I was kind of speaking very well about cites to the record that allow for the defense instructions. First of all, I would point to 586 of the jury trial.
This is on a spoilation position you take.
Correct.
Five what?
The jury trial transcript, page 586 through about 590. And basically, this is what the trooper says that I believe would militate towards requiring these spoliation instructions, and this would be the grounding of the spoliation and the evidence that would require the court to give the spoliation. Question. Bernie Angasser's blood were on the passenger door, the top of the door. If his head hit the glass on impact, would that have evidentiary value to a witness? There's an objection then. That would have some value to you if you could have found it. If that was his blood. The trooper says, to me it would have, yes. Question. Why? Answer. Because I would hope that I could use that to determine where the people were seated in the vehicle. Question. Because if the blood is on the passenger door, it would show or could show that that's where he was sitting when an impact occurred, right? Answer, that's my thinking. Yes, that was my thinking. And that was.
Counsel said that one is more of an expert on what was going on, Mr. Reese, and he said it wouldn't have anything. Because of the, I believe I put down, because of the nature of the crash. What do you say to that?
What I say to that is jury trial, page 630. This is what Mr. Reese said. First of all, Mr. Reese indicated that he didn't have any expertise in determining it was just general principles. But here's the question.
What was he called to testify about?
He was called to testify about the hair. The hair on the visor and about the state of the vehicle, as I recall. He did not give an expert opinion as to the city. Here's what he was asked. Question. All right. Let's just assume for a moment, if You would have looked at the passenger door of that Corvette that same way that you looked at it on August 23rd. If you'd have been able to look at it in the early morning hours of July 31st, if you saw a thin spray of blood, tiny portions of blood on there, is that something that could have been tested for the presence of DNA? All right, and now if a door is dusted lightly with blood because of a high-speed impact, whether it be to the back of the head or to the side of the head, if that blood were Dorothy Finley's, that would be consistent with her being the passenger, wouldn't it, sir? Answer, it's a possibility, yes. Question, likewise, if that blood were Bernie Engasser's blood, that would be consistent with Bernie Engasser being the passenger. Witness, sir. Answer, it depends on the injuries, but it is possible, yes. So there is the foundation.
So what you're saying is that if it was properly preserved, it didn't have to be on July 31st. It could have been August 31st. It could have been discovered then. Is that because of the fact that it was allowed to sit out, you couldn't do that, is what I'm saying?
Ed Meade County used the same evidentiary procedures that are used at the state crime lab. You wouldn't be here on this issue because we all would have been able. It is a routine matter to store a car out of the elements if it has any basic evidentiary value. The court brought up this situation
before you move. Next question. Here's the words. Possible. Hope. Maybe. Is there any evidence? To say. Probable. Possible.
No, because it was destroyed. The question was brought up about whether or not there was probable cause for a search. As I was saying before, I believe that the case law in Lamont require an objective standard for the search of the person's blood. It would require probable cause to arrest plus an exigency. You have a clear exigency with the alcohol leaving the system. The question is whether or not there exists probable cause to believe that Engasser committed an offense at the time. Blood was gone. It's undisputed there was no arrest. This isn't even the result of a detention, as in Cup versus Murphy. This isn't even the result of any kind of a seizure by law enforcement that would approach an arrest that would get him into Rawlings versus Kentucky and those types of cases. But I will tell you, there is no probable cause here. Trooper prepared the first report. He says, with the impressions of the paramedics, the other witnesses, he lists Dorothy Finley as a driver and Bernie Engasser as the passenger. He says under oath that he went to the hospital and he was told otherwise, and then he requested the blood. But his report, which you'll find in the record as defendant's exhibit I, his report that he issued after leaving the hospital, I'm trying to clarify this, he writes, the passenger in vehicle one was ejected. That would be Engasser. The driver of vehicle one was found. Vehicle, that would be Finley. Vehicle one contained two occupants. The driver was the fatality victim, and the passenger was transported to Rapid City Regional. Well,
doesn't
I understand.
That go more to what his credibility is? When you're in trial, I should cross-examine him on that.
I was.
Not all those inconsistencies.
I was. And my point was not for the credibility of the trial, it was for the probable cause determination. If after he leaves the hospital, he's writing a report saying that she was the driver and Bernie was the passenger, would not have had information available to him at that time to bring that into doubt, or he would have said it cannot be determined at this point in time who was the driver.
An accident.
He was.
And there was no eyewitness agreement out there to tell him exactly that they had seen A or B driver.
Correct.
So he didn't know.
He didn't know for sure, and he said as much. If we look at page 12, I believe, of transcript. The reason that he asked for the blood was as follows. I asked both individuals to do a blood test. That would have been Bernie Engasser and the father in the van who was hit. Just as a precautionary measure, noting the alcohol and noting that there was a fatality involved. Well, I understand there is very good reason that probable cause is not determined by an officer's subjective intent. If a person is privy to all of the investigatory writes reports that this individual is the driver of the vehicle, and then justifies taking the blood just as a precautionary measure, I would submit to you that there is not doing this person any probable cause, that there did not exist probable cause. And let me tell you, I have seven
times counsel who intended to look at the facts.
Correct. is an objective standard. The review is de novo. Here are the facts that I would request to at least consider. Paramedics told two. Generally, troopers see the owners of their vehicle driving their vehicles. Three, there was no witness to AM gas or driving. Four, there's a report listing AM gas or driving. Five, second report after the hospital blood draw still lists Finley as the driver and Angasser as the passenger. Six, Angasser, in his incoherent state being injured with a severe head trauma, that was undisputed, said he wasn't driving. Seven.
2 minutes.
What's that?
2 minutes.
Oh, thank you. I thought you said I was done.
No.
Okay, seven. He was looking at Angasser not as a suspect, but rather as an occupant of the vehicle. He testified to that. He did not tell the doctor that. The medical reports indicate that Angasser was involved in an accident. I cross-examined the doctor, and he said he wasn't sure what information came from Angasser and what information came from the paramedics who brought him in. Angasser, when approached by Trooper Fox, and he was strapped down to the head because his head injury was shaking, the trooper comes up and tries to talk to him. He says, I wasn't driving. I wasn't driving the vehicle.
So he volunteered that. The officer didn't ask.
Said that. I asked the trooper, incidentally, he places no significance on it. I said, would you have placed any significance on it had he blurted out to you, I was the driver? And the trooper says, no, it wouldn't have been fair. So that did come from Angasser. That was blurted out. He was in an incoherent state. He was in the hospital for 7 days after that and did not have any memory of the event. As I was saying,
so that is the paramedics that came up to take care of the injured parties at the accident.
Correct.
They said that your client was not driving.
Well, one of the paramedics said that Dorothy was other than that, they weren't. This is just the emergency room. What's this? This is an accident.
That was just clearly wrong. There's no way she would have been.
The investigation, first of all, several people said that. Several people said that. And you look at the reports and you look at the evidence, that didn't become apparent to Trooper Fox until much later on September 9th, and the interviewing people. I think in the end, it is true that she was over on the passenger side of the vehicle. In interviewing the witnesses and placing the pictures before them, she was away from the open door, and the open door was on the security of the driver's door.
Could not have been moved. She was dead on the scene. She couldn't have moved herself. Nobody could testify. They didn't know her.
No, they lifted that car up with the jaws of life and dragged her out of that and checked her pulse.
Thank you, counsel. Court will be in recess for 10 minutes.